Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
It's News Talk. It's the Anton Savage Show. With me is best-selling Dublin author of All Her Fault, Andrea Mara. And of course, All Her Fault has been picked up by Sky TV and is now starring Emmy Award-winning... it has been turned into... a show by Emmy Award-winning actress Sarah Snook, and has one of those kind of casts that you, I assume, you only dream about when you start to type the book in the first place. Andrea, lovely to see you.
Lovely to see you too.
So the phone call comes in late at night to say we'd like, what is it? What do they say? We'd like
the phone call. I got a phone call from my agent late one night in February 24, going, "Look at your email. Look at your email." And I was like, "Oh my God, what is going on here?" Fear of God in me that I'd done something wrong. And it was a link to a Hollywood Reporter article that Peacock had. Peacock, our NBC streamer in America, we don't have them here. Had
big
ordered
giant piles of cash, huge
and they had said for All Her Fault to be adapted to an 8-part series and for it to go straight to series, which I didn't even understand that at the time, but often they commission a pilot first and then see how that goes. But this was, no, just go straight ahead and make 8 episodes and off we go. So,
and
yeah.
Do you have to, at that point, is it that the optioning is already done and you're getting notification, or do you have to give your imprimatur to them doing this?
So the option had been done. So it had been optioned maybe 2 years before that. And I knew from chatting to other authors that, you know, it's very exciting when it gets optioned. And yes, you can open a bottle of bubbly and celebrate, but then you put it out of your head, because 95% of options never actually come into being a TV show. So you can't sit there thinking about that. You got to get on with writing books and just, you know, quietly every now and then cross your fingers. And so, yeah, I was just really lucky.
Some of them can take multiple decades. I was watching that fabulous documentary on Martin Scorsese, and there's a couple of books that he's had optioned for 40 years.
Oh my God.
That he just has never gotten around. You know, the moment hasn't been right to put them on. Getting it turned around that fast is amazing.
Yeah, it is unusual. And I have heard similar of, you know, books. I've heard of ones that certainly have been 10 years and just sitting there. And I suppose there is a thing where production companies might buy an option because a book is really big, or they have a sense that, you know, they want to have it so other people can't have it. But it could take them a long time before they can turn their heads to it and go, yeah, let's work on this one now. So, yeah.
Now, I assume lucky. The flip side of this is you now know that somebody else is going to take something that you slaved over, sweated over, edited, sub-edited, re-edited, redrafted, got honed down, and they could just wreck it totally.
Yeah, well, the thing is, they can do anything they want. And you're aware, again, luckily, because I have friends who knew about this, you know that they could take a psychological thriller, which All Her Fault is, and turn it into a sci-fi TV show with aliens. They can do anything they want. Like, people would say to me, would you be worried? What if they change something? And I'm like, no, they can change anything they want, because you sign a contract when you sign the option, and then you're giving them the right to do whatever they want. Now,
you seem very relaxed and sanguine about this.
But I see it as two separate things. Like, I don't think a TV adaptation should be or is ever supposed to be a faithful retelling of exactly what's in the book. It's supposed to be the TV version. So, like, where an audiobook should be exactly the words on the page, TV isn't supposed to be the same. And I love watching a TV adaptation of a book I've read. for that very reason, to see what they did differently and wondering, oh, I wonder why they did that. Oh, maybe that's more dramatic for TV, or we needed a happy ending for TV where readers might be okay with something more vague. You know, so there's lots of different reasons they make changes.
You're very even-tempered. Lee Child and the Jack Reacher series. I always think about how Lee Child must watch when that made it to silver screen. Now, I think it made it to silver screen very well, but it made it to silver screen with Tom Cruise as Jack Reacher. Now, Jack Reacher is meant to be 6'5", I think 130 kilos, and they cast Tom Cruise in the role.
I suspect the fans cared a lot more than Lee Child did about that, being quite honest.
You think Lee Child dabbed his eyes with the check and got on with his
Yeah, I think he was just fine.
So, have you watched it? Have you seen it? Will you watch it?
My show?
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh,
did you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Listen, I saw the first episode 5 times because I got sent it one random Wednesday afternoon and watched it in my kitchen while I was making dinner, because it was nice just to see it on my own in a really, like, just sort of scanning it way. And then watched it with my family, went to a screening in London, went to the New York premiere, which was unbelievable, best experience of my career. And then I had a watch party in my house. So I saw, I know the first episode off by heart. If anyone wants me to, like, quote the whole thing, I can do that. And then it was only when it came out on Now TV here that I watched the next 7 episodes.
Why was the London premiere the best experience of your
life?
The
New York premiere was the
best. I apologise. Now, I mean, that gives me a better insight into why it was so good.
There's a lot of premieres. It was just, like, I mean, I'm just this regular person from Dublin, and suddenly I'm sitting in a theatre in New York and Dakota Fanning is just there, like 2 feet away from me, and Abby Elliott is just behind her, Jake Lacy, Sarah Snook, they're like 4 in a row sitting across the aisle from me. And I know that Dakota and Abby hadn't seen it yet. So, whereas, as I say, I'd seen it many times. So I was able to sort of not so much focus on the screen, but focus on the moment in my head, thinking, I am watching Dakota Fanning and Sarah Snook watch themselves on screen playing the part of people I made up in my head. So I just was like, I want to hang on to that forever.
How faithfully did they do it, and how faithfully did your dialogue last as it made it to the screen?
Like, I was really surprised, because the opening scenes of the first episode are pretty faithful to the opening chapter of the book. And actually, there was a brilliant video on YouTube where Sarah Snook reads the first chapter of the book while they play the TV show, and you can see how faithful it is there. And that, like, they didn't need to do that. So it's really, really lovely that they did. And then so the hook is the same, the ending is the same, characters are the same, same cast of characters. But to make 8 hours of TV, they needed to add in Megan Gallagher, the screenwriter, they needed to add in lots of extra storylines and subplots and backstories for the characters. So it's sort of the middle bit has a lot of extra stuff, but the core, the themes, the social commentary side of it is all
the same.
And did
she bounce any of that off you?
We did. We met for a celebratory lunch, and she told me what she was thinking. So, for example, Detective Alcaraz is the detective who investigates the whole thing. He's played by Michael Peña, and he has a whole backstory, a really lovely backstory about his wife and his son. And that's not in the book. The book has a female Garda detective called McConville, and she doesn't get a story. She's basically in there because my editor keeps saying to me, Andrea, I know you don't want to do police procedural, but the police would investigate a kidnapping. So I have to put in police then. So I knew
to get involved a little.
I knew she had done, you know, added those things in, and they sent me the script. So I went to see filming in Melbourne, and I was sent the scripts before that. So I was reading those on the plane on the way over. So I knew exactly what was going to happen. But I was still surprised when I watched it, because I think I had kind of focused on what was different, and I had forgotten or glossed over how much was actually carried through from the book to the show. So that was lovely.
It must be amazing to know that you are the genesis for something of that scale. I mean, flying to Melbourne to see filming, big New York premiere, that thing of this all started with me and a laptop.
Like, it's crazy, and it's very surreal. I'm kind of pinching myself all the time, but I also am very aware how much luck came into it, and that's not any kind of faux humility. Like, it's pure luck sometimes when these things happen. There's a lot of amazing, amazing, amazing books that would make great TV shows. But, for example, in my case, my book was reviewed in the Sunday Times on August 1st, 2021, Dublin. And I didn't know this, but Nigel Marchant from Carnival happened to be reading the Sunday Times that morning. He saw the book and went out and bought a copy. That's how it came about. But if he had read a different paper that morning, or I hadn't had my book in that paper that morning, this wouldn't have happened. So there's a lot of little random things along the way that had to happen for this to be on my TV screen.
Also has to start with a pretty good book. So what are you working on currently?
So my latest book is called Such a Nice Girl, and that's coming in May. It's about two women who are best friends, and their two adult daughters are best friends, or so they think. But then the two girls disappear from a wedding, and the moms realise that one of them is trying to kill the other, but they don't know which one is the victim and which one is the culprit.
Do the Gardaí take an interest? I assume somewhere
does McConville show up. We had to put some Gardaí in again. So.
And that's all done and finished and drafted.
Almost, yeah. It's like it's at the second to last editing stage.
Do you feel increased pressure because of the success of All Her Fault?
No, it's more the opposite, that like it's been really good in terms of publicity. So I'm hoping it'll help with the new book when it comes out. So, yeah.
But it doesn't weigh on you. You don't have that sort of I'm hoping this one gets picked up, because I assume the attention increases. Well, I mean, you described the Sunday Times lucky. And if you've had a successful shift to the small screen, I assume people in that milieu now pay attention and watch what's coming out from you.
Yeah, no, that it is good. So like, say, All Her Fault had been out a couple of months by the time I got an email to say there's a production company who'd like to meet you. Whereas with Such a Nice Girl, there's already people interested in that and it hasn't come out yet. So it does work really well in that sense, that there's more interest. Yeah.
What about the pressure to come up with new plot lines and topics? Do you find that difficult? Because you know that this line of everybody has a book in them. Yeah, one.
I have a big Word doc where I keep all my ideas, and some of them are just kind of one-liners that would never be a book in their own right. But then you couple them with something else on the same list and you go, okay, now that could be a book. So I have loads of ideas. Usually when I go back to pick one out for the next book, I'm kind of like, oh, that one's not quite as good as I thought it was. But eventually one does make sense, and then I send it to my editor and we to and fro a bit about whether or not that's going to work and take it from there.
That's amazing, because I was talking to Paul Brady the other week and he was saying very similar things about how he writes songs, that often there will be simply a line that occurs to him and he writes it down and keeps it in a drawer.
Ah.
And then one day he goes, hang on a minute, I had something about.
Aha.
And that sparks it, and away he goes.
I love that. Okay, that's really interesting, because I couldn't write a song to save my life, but that's fascinating.
Well, don't write it off as a possibility just yet. You never know. If Hollywood comes calling, you need to have that option on you, that in your quiver. How long does it take you to produce a book?
I suppose about 2 years in total, between the start off of the outline to the book hitting the shelves. But you're always, because I write a book a year, you're always working on maybe three at the same time. So you might be writing one, editing one, and thinking ahead for the idea for the one that will come out the year after.
How do you keep on top of the plotting?
Notes, spreadsheets, notebooks, Word docs, everything. Big whiteboard I bought during lockdown.
Well, congratulations again on the success of All Her Fault, and best of luck. You said the new one coming out, title again?
In May, Such a Nice Girl.
Such a Nice Girl. Andrea, thank you. Andrea Mara, author of All Her Fault and Such a Nice Girl, hitting bookshops in May.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.